Hi, welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm Karen Spies, and I'm here today with Martha Burich. Martha is the author of the book, Yes, You Can Raise Happy, Responsible Children, which has been rated 5 stars on Amazon. And it's been endorsed by Jack Canfield, who's the co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul series and The Success Principles. Martha's second book is for teachers, and it's called Yes, You Can Teach Them All. She's expected to have it out in 2026. Martha was a college child psychology professor for 10 years and a high school science teacher, working with special education kids for 16 years. She's in the 2025 edition of Who's Who in America from Marquee. And one of the ways she contributes to the community is by going to jails and treatment centers and speaking with people who have issues with addiction and alcohol. And she herself has been in recovery for over 7 years. So welcome, Martha.
Super happy to be here, Karen.
So let's start out. So you started out as a high school teacher and then you in science, and then you moved into being a college professor in child psychology?
It actually went the other way. I got my master's degree and then started teaching at the college because they needed adjunct professors, and child psychology was my thing. And then I did that for 10 years. And then I became a high school special education science and math teacher. Yes. So I have a lot of experience with changing behavior, helping people change their children's behavior, and helping people, you know, learn.
Right. So why did you, so you moved from psychology into science is basically what you're saying. Yeah. So that's interesting. Did you do that because of the special ed aspect, or what caused you to make that transition?
Oh, that's really a good question. Well, I became a special ed teacher and I did become certified in science, but when they look for special education teachers, and I was hired on in a district that was desperate for teachers, and they said, if you already have a degree, and I did, I had a master's degree. They said, well, you know, we'll let you start teaching now and give you a few years to get your certification. So that's what I did. I started teaching immediately. And when you walk in the door, they pretty much ask, okay, what do you want to teach? And everybody else wanted English and social studies. I said, well, I like math and science. So there you go. And then I went ahead and got certified in those subjects. That's kind of, you know, in areas that are really desperate for teachers, especially in special ed, they do make, you know, more accommodations. And I've seen that around also now. You know, there are some areas that teachers don't want to go to. So I certainly got an education in behavior and changing behavior and helping children develop their self-esteem and their sense of worth.
How did you find that, like, in the field kind of experience versus your academic studies?
Yeah, absolutely shocking. You know, when a person is in college, when I was in college, especially in the master's and PhD programs, you know, you're in an isolated environment, and it's everything's just different, totally different. You're usually surrounded by people who are like you, and everybody has basically the same IQ, you know, all in that area, and interests and et cetera, because, you know, there I was in the psychology and education departments. So then when you go out into the real world, oh, goodness, and especially when you walk into a high school, well, let me tell you, there's a lot to learn. Now, I had also been a substitute teacher, so I understood a lot about that environment and how, you know, you have to meet people where they are, and especially students, you can't be angry and aggravated by their behaviors because it doesn't benefit. They've already had enough of that for people to be mad at them and pushing back constantly. So I had to learn how to accept a lot, sometimes the unacceptable, and how to work around it and help them to develop better behaviors, but not in a way that embarrassed them or shamed them or caused them difficulties in school, because they had enough difficulties in school.
Right. So did you write your book, your book about raising happy, responsible children, that was after your high school teaching experience?
No,
or during?
It was before. It was before, and all in the book helped me to deal with those students. You know, I wrote the book. Well, see, when my son was 4, Lord, he was difficult. It was very difficult because his dad and I, we thought the way you raise a happy child is you don't say no. You say no as little as possible. And you give them as much as they want. We were wrong, Karen. We were very wrong. And I had to work really hard to turn that around. And it took me about 2 months. And, you know, I got to tell you this. One day, I was about maybe a month after I started the program, and Anthony and I were talking, and he said, "Are you trying to use that psychology stuff on me again?" And I said, "Yes, dear, yes, I am." And he said, "Well, you know, it doesn't work." And he was wrong. It was really working very well. He did not realize how his behavior was changing. He was becoming cooperative and pleasant. Not at that moment, but and pleasant many times.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, one time my son had a birthday party, and his favorite kind of cake was carrot cake. And one of the kids at the party was one of those kids that the mother would like make them smoothies and mix in like broccoli in the smoothie or something to give them their vegetables. And the kid looked, he took a bite and he was like, "Oh, that's good." And then he looked at it and he saw the carrots and he goes, "This is health cake. I don't want this." So it's funny how they think, how they resist.
That is a really good story. He really liked it. And he's, "Oh my goodness, it's health cake. Yeah." That's funny.
Right, just like your son, like, "This isn't working on me." "Oh, okay. Sure."
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing for adults. You know, we eat protein bars instead of donuts.
That's true. That's true. If we make them healthy, we feel better about eating them. Healthy right. Marshmallows.
Yeah, there you go. Just saw a recipe for homemade marshmallows that I think I'm going to try. It looked pretty good, but it's all sugar. It's nothing but sugar and Karo syrup and gelatin. But I thought, wow, that looks like fun.
Yeah. I actually saw one recently too, which is why I brought it up. So back to the book. So how long ago did you release that book, The Happy Responsible Children?
Yes, you can raise happy, responsible children. I love how Riverside does everything backwards. Anyway, yes, you can raise happy, responsible children. It was released August of 2024, and every review is 5 stars. There's one woman who has 4 children. She keeps the book with her at all times. I had a teacher read it. She said this is the worst kindergarten class I've ever had. A person who had the book gave it to her, and she read it, and she used some of the things in it, and her classroom turned around completely. Part of our problem, Karen, I've been seeing, you know, so many people rely on yelling, punishing, and really making life unpleasant for children. And children don't want to be around people who are always criticizing them. Of course, there's a time when people have to confront us on our behaviors, but we don't do that at mealtime. Mealtimes are supposed to be pleasant. And if you have to have a conversation with a child about their behavior, you need to make an appointment and say, "You know what? We need to talk about this. Is this a good time?" And, you know, and don't embarrass them and shame them in front of their friends or in front of other family members and people, and try to make it between the two of you to come to an agreement. And, you know, and people seem to think, "I don't know, if a child does wrong, they should be hit." Well, you know, I do wrong all the time. I make mistakes. And what's doing wrong? Making mistakes. I make mistakes all the time. Karen, if somebody hit me every time I made a mistake, I would be sitting in the middle of the room crying. I wouldn't do anything. I'd be afraid to move. And there's even an example of that. I once went to see a child psychologist. Her baby was like 18 months. And when she was home alone with the baby, all was fine. But when dad came home, he was so punishing every time the child did something wrong. When dad came home, the baby would just sit in the middle of the room and do nothing. And cry. He was afraid to move. That's not how we want to raise people. Okay, yes. You know, let's say your child bullies. You don't need to be mean to them. You need to have a really conversation. Okay, let's talk about this. Why? What's going on there? And, you know, and I have to confess, I was a bully in high school. There was a girl I was so jealous of. I used to call her ugly and everything else every chance I got. Why? Because I had low self-esteem and I was jealous of her because I think she had the boyfriend I wanted. And, you know, years later, I apologized to her. I said, "Oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry." I realized, because she grew up to be an absolute swan, you know, from the ugly duckling to the swan. And she was absolutely beautiful. And I apologized. Right. She goes, "Oh, I never to you," which is good. Good for her, but bad for me. So, you know, when people bully, it's because they have bad self-esteem themselves. So you have to talk to your child. And then there have to be consequences. You need to apologize. You need to buy him lunch. You need to sit down and have a conversation with her. You know, we need to get this solved, because that is not the way that we go through life, is to try to, you know, make other people feel bad. That does not help us or them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you need to treat your child you need to not treat your child as an adult because they need to know when things are wrong and you need to correct them, but you need to treat them with respect, which is how we usually see treating adults. So, right?
Yeah, good point. Good point. And, you know, one time Anthony was, I think it was third grade, we were at the parent-teacher conference, and the teacher said, you know, Anthony's a wonderful kid, he's smart, blah, 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 but I have one complaint, and that is when he finishes his work, he won't help anybody else. I said, oh, that's interesting. Let's call him over, because, you know, we don't do anything behind somebody's back. So I had him come over, and she said the same thing. I said, Anthony, what do you think of this? Do you agree? And he goes, yeah, it's true. And I said, well, why do you do that? Why don't you help other children? He said, because they don't listen when she gives instructions. And then they want me to help them and tell them what to do. And I'm not going to do that. They should have listened to her. So in actuality, Anthony was helping the teacher and she didn't realize it. So he had a good reason for
his behavior. That's a great story.
Yeah. So you want to ask children, you know.
And everybody thought he was being selfish, right?
Right. Exactly. Do you agree with this? Yes, she's right. Well, how come you do that? Because, and then, yeah, so in actuality, she was encouraging children to misbehave and not listen and pay attention by letting other children help them when they didn't finish their work in time or when they couldn't get to their assignment because they didn't know what to do. Why? Because they weren't listening. Yeah, you need to find these things out. And that's why you always have to talk with your kids and say, okay, here's what's going to happen. Are you willing to do that? You know, can you do that? Yes, I can. Are you willing? No. No, I'm not willing to do that. Are you willing to help other children? No. Why not? And then you get the answers, and then you can work around it or find a way. It's like making children share everything. You know, Karen, I don't share my car. I don't share my computer. You know, when people come over to your house to play, you have to say to your child, look, so-and-so's coming over. Let's put away the things that you really don't want anything to happen to, that you don't want to share. And let's leave out some toys that you're willing to share. Because otherwise, we're blowing through children's boundaries. They don't understand that they can have boundaries. And then the next thing you know, they're victims and they think they have to please everybody all the time and don't know how to say no and don't have boundaries. And they grow up to be adults. You know, I met a woman 50 years old. I gave a talk about how to say no. She was 50 years old. She came up to me afterwards. She goes, I've never said no. I said, what? She goes, I've never said no to my children, to anybody. And it's that whole fear of, oh my goodness, I can't say no, all from childhood.
It's very much like the tell so-and-so you're sorry thing, right? Where there's a conflict and you just force the child to apologize, even though they don't feel it. They don't understand why they're apologizing. Again, just like tramping right over the boundaries.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So how did you find it was? Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Well, you go ahead. I want to hear what you had to say.
Well, you know, you have to let children solve a lot of their own problems. Sometimes we step in too soon. You know, like when children come to you and, you know, he hit me, blah, blah, blah. And let me give you this quick example. Okay, I had two older brothers and, you know, I always thought my mom loved them more, blah, blah, blah. So I was always trying to get them in trouble. And my mother would come home from work and then I would start with the fake tears. And as soon as that poor woman walked in the door, I'd be crying and blah, 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 you know, and get them in trouble. And boy, did I love that. I absolutely loved it. But my mother would interfere and then give them trouble. Blah, 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 you know. So you really need to let kids solve problems on their own. Now, of course, there are times when you need to step in. But you have to really listen and say, well, you know what? That's really not my business. Can you solve that problem yourself? What do you think you can do about that? You know, when it comes to abuse or things like that, it's totally different. But you have to really kind of pay attention and try to find out what's really going on without you being the judge all the time. Because then children are always going to other people. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? Well, wait a minute. What do you think? Why? What happened? What do you think happened? What do you think can happen tomorrow? How can you fix this?
Yeah, it's almost like our empathy or compassion subverts the situation because we want the child to be out of conflict or pain as soon as possible, right? But in that process, we remove the opportunity for them to do some problem solving and some critical thinking by themselves.
Yeah, boy, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly
how would you
right.
say, how would you say it was different working with special ed kids?
Well, for one
or would
thing,
you
they
say
have,
it was different?
Oh, definitely. Their self-esteem is just beaten down. They're teased a lot. They're bullied because they're in special ed. Didn't matter how smart they are. And you know, And we have this whole thing about, you know, people being smart. I had one student, his self-esteem was just so low. There's no way, every time I tried to correct him on anything, like how to fix something, I see you misunderstood this. He was so defensive. It was so difficult to deal with him because he was so defensive. He was always afraid to be wrong. But, you know, how many adults do we know like that? That they'd rather be right than happy. So he couldn't take in, yeah. You know, well, here's how you could fix that. Just the fact that he made a mistake, he couldn't handle it. He just absolutely couldn't handle it. So it was very difficult to try to get him to change or to do anything because his self-esteem, he believed that it was attack upon his character or whatever, that it was somehow evidence that he wasn't smart. And because someone's quote unquote special ed doesn't mean that they aren't smart. Doesn't mean they can't solve their problems. Doesn't mean they can't excel in many, many ways. So we do them a disservice when we say, well, you know, you can't do this. Because in special ed, we learn how to work around things and handle things in other ways. And there are, of course, there are things a lot of us can't do. My brother's a mechanical engineer. And, you know, and I'm PhD all but dissertation. And he's always telling me, you know, how come you don't know about electricity? How come you can't fix this? How come you can't fix that? Duh. You know, maybe because I went to college and I'm a lot of book smart and I understand about psychology and things. And you and dad taking cars apart and doing stuff. I didn't have that exposure. So he doesn't quite understand that. So it's the same thing. There's different, I'm not going to say different types of intelligences, but there's different knowledge. There's different knowledge. So we have to recognize that with students. Well, you know, this, you're not the greatest at this, but boy, you really do this well. Just like I'm not the greatest at, you know, electricity and whatnot, but I can do a lot of other things well.
I was talking with somebody recently someone asked me about an IQ test, and oh boy, that gets my goat. I hate that IQ test thing. And every time somebody mentions an IQ test to me, I remember an episode of Different Strokes. Remember Different Strokes from the 80s or something? What you talking about, Willis? That show. And there was an episode where they have made the kids at school take an IQ test. And the kids did really poorly on the IQ test. And like the backstory is that these two children were adopted and they came from like a very poor family, right? And they were adopted by this very wealthy family. And so they went to this fancy school and they took this IQ test and they did really poorly on it. And these shows always had like a moral at the end, you know, and the dad would called up the principal and he's like, if my kids were stranded in the middle of a city and didn't have any money or anybody to help them, they would be fine. They would know what to do. Nobody, you're not testing for that. You're only testing for this book knowledge or basically a history of this upper class education. And every time I think about, I mean, we use smart as such a common compliment, but really everybody's smart about different things. It should really gets under my nails. And I feel like, you know, special ed kids, I feel like deal with that a lot because of this label. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And everyone, it's like you said, everyone has their thing that they're really good at. Some people are really good with animals. Some people are really good with, you know, book learning. Some people are really good, like my brother, with mechanical things. And had I been exposed to all that, you know what? Had we all been exposed to that, we'd all know how to fix the washing machine, how to fix the plumbing, how to do all that. But we aren't. So it all depends on what we're exposed to. Oh, because you know, you probably know people who can fix anything because they had a parent or a relative who would take them with them to fix stuff and help them and stuff like that. And then, you know, people who know a lot about a lot. So yeah, we all have different knowledge. And thank goodness, because otherwise, it'd be pretty boring.
Well, and yeah, we all have, I mean, I could take algebra classes over and over and over again. I would never be good at algebra. It's just not my skill set. But yeah, so you worked with special ed kids for the whole 16 years that you were there?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And you wrote this book really recently. I thought because you had quoted Jack Canfield, I thought that it was like a book that had been written long ago, but it was, you said it came out in 2024.
Yeah, it came out in 2024, but it was written a long time ago. I met Jack Canfield in 1988. He used to give self-esteem seminars in St. Louis, Missouri, where I lived. And so I did all of Jack's. He had self-esteem 1, 2, and 3, which are 2 and 3 day self-esteem intensives. And then I, you know, went to California and did a couple of seminars with him and things. So I had that background. And then let's see, I think I met Jack when Anthony was 6. So it was after I had taken those lessons, those parenting lessons. So I always had that knowledge in the back of my mind. And it was after I think Anthony was about 11 when I wrote the book. And then I just put it in a drawer. And then one day I opened the drawer and said, wait a minute, people need to know this. And yes. And so I sent it to Jack and said, you know, what do you think? And he said, this is really good. Let me endorse it and let's get this out there. This people need this information because it's the information that saved our family, but not just our relationship with our son, our relationship with each other. You know, it's helped me handle other people. It's the same information I use when I go into the jail, when I go to the treatment center, because then again, I'm dealing with people with who have very poor self-esteem, who are constantly trying to build themselves up because they feel so bad about themselves. So you can't fall into that trap, and you can't let them get into their victim trap either, because that's not going to benefit them. Yes, the information in that book, you know, just number one, tell people what you do not what you don't want, you know. So if someone's, you know, talking too much, you say, you know what, everybody gets their turn. Your turn's coming. So rather than stop talking, you know, here's how we do this. You know, and let's say you're in the classroom and a child is blurting out answers. I hear answers, but I don't see hands, is what I used to say. And that would remind them, oh, I need to raise my hand. Don't call on a child who's blurting out answers. And, you know, and every child wants to feel important. Every person wants to feel important. So remember names. And if you don't remember their name, say, you know what? I really apologize. I don't remember your name. I don't see you enough. What's your name again? Oh, yes. Now I remember. You know, and then acknowledge the things they do right.
When did you start volunteering at the jail and the treatment centers?
Oh, it's been about 5 years. I've been doing that about 5 years. And, you know, I decided, you know, I've never been in jail myself. I never got in any trouble or anything like that. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are people who go into the jails and give Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And so I was at a meeting one time and I said, you know, I need more. I really need more. And there was a man there who said, well, I'm in charge of the jail program. Why don't you fill out the application? And I thought, you know what? I taught high school. I can handle anybody. Nobody scares me. If anybody should go into the jail, it's me. And I know how to handle people when they're, you know, melting down and engaging in inappropriate behaviors and things without being over dramatic or getting having a fit. So that's exactly what happened. So it was 4 weeks from the time I filled out the application till I started hosting meetings at the jail. And the changes in people have been really, really, really gratifying. You know, I've had, you know, several women who, parents who got out and, you know, CPS was going to take away their children. They got out of jail and CPS said, well, you know what, you've changed so much. We're not going to take away your children. They had terrible relationships with their parents. And, you know, because of the things that we talked about in our meetings and because of the information in my book that I would tell them, it totally changed things all completely around. So yes, it's been very, very gratifying.
So,
and you know, really,
you
isn't that
say,
the key to life? Karen, isn't the key to life helping others?
For sure.
Yeah. That's how we feel youthful.
Yeah. And connected. And what's better than feeling connected, really? If you have the self-esteem and the ability to handle it and communicate. Yeah, for sure. So how would you say your experience volunteering with, you know, people in these different contexts of like the jail and the treatment centers, how would you say that affected your like sober journey?
Oh, well, for one thing, you know, I always thought to myself, you need to be a good example. These people need good examples. They need people who are doing the right thing and showing them that it can be done. And that was very, very important. And you know what I really noticed in the jail? It's just really interesting. The women would talk to me about how, you know, the guards were mean and blah, blah, blah. And so we would have discussions about that. And I said, well, tell me this. is everybody here in the jail with you? Are they all pleasant, wonderful human beings? And of course, they had to say no, because some of the women were very, very trying and difficult. You know, I was lucky most of the ones that came to my class wanted to be there. And so they would say, you know, so-and-so's a mean guard or whatever. I said, well, imagine what she deals with every day. She has to deal with so-and-so. And could you handle that? And you know that woman lies all the time. And you know that. How do you handle that? How do you think she can handle that? She could lose her job if she trusts somebody and they do the wrong thing. So they lacked empathy. That's what I noticed a lot of. Most of the women in the jail really did not understand. I had one woman, her mother, she got put in jail for drugs, and she had three children. And the mother took care of the children while she was in jail. And she said to me, she goes, you know, every time my mother and I talk, we argue. And the mother would call at least once a week and they would talk about the kids and whatnot. And I said, well, I'm going to give you some suggestions how to handle that, what to do. And she said, yes, I do want to hear it. I said, you let your mother criticize you? Because that's what was going on. Mom was mad. If you wouldn't have done this, and she was constantly blaming the girl, but yes, you did do this. I said, did you do that? Is now your mother's life harder because she has to raise your children while you're in here? And then she had to really think about that a little bit. I said, you know what? You let your mom get it out. You stop defending yourself. Because for one thing, you got nothing to defend. You need to hear what she has to say. These are called consequences. They're consequences to behavior. You have not exhibited good behavior and your mother's dealing with it. So you need to listen and hear. That's all you have to do. Yes, mom. So, oh, yes, mom. Okay, I hear you, mom. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. But don't defend yourself. Listen and think about what your mother's telling you, how you've affected her and your children, and what you can do differently. So after doing that and being quiet and stopping the trying to defend herself, their relationship totally changed. Totally changed. She and her mother, they started having pleasant conversations. They could laugh on the phone because she got out of that defensive mode and started saying, well, you know what? Okay, I need to hear what she has to say. And this is, you know, a lot of times if people quote unquote insult us, well, how dare you insult me? Why don't you just listen to what they're saying? You don't have to change. Why don't you just say, oh, that's interesting. Stop defending yourself. Oh, that's interesting. And, you know, we get our panties in a wad, like someone will say, you're a bad mother. And, oh, my God, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. No. Well, why don't you just listen? Oh, why makes you say that? You don't let your child have candy. Oh, thanks for telling me. You know, because usually if you ask, well, why, what makes you say that? You'll find out it's some really mundane, silly reason, but you don't say that back to them. Oh, how silly. You go, oh, thank you. Thank you for telling me. I'll think about it. That's all you have to do.
It's like a cross between, like, you can't do that if you don't have strong self-esteem. You always feel like you have to defend yourself, right? If you have doubt within yourself, but What's striking me when you're talking is I had a conversation with somebody this past week about toxic positivity. And I feel like people actually put that on other, they feel like there can't be any negative interactions, or that means something's wrong or misaligned. And it's such a disservice because it, again, just like you're talking about, it just like defending yourself just breaks off the communication, right?
Right.
And saying, oh, well, I don't want to hear this because this isn't positive. You know, that also just breaks down the communication. And without communication, you can't develop empathy. So then you're just stuck in your own little cell, for lack of a better word.
Exactly. And then you say, nobody likes me, or I don't have any friends, or I'm so lonely, or people are so negative, or yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So can you talk a little bit about your upcoming book?
Yes, you can teach them all. It's for teachers. And, you know, when I was a substitute teacher, a lot of things came up. And it's the same thing as when I was a teacher. You know, it's a book for teachers that helps teachers run their classrooms. You know, the whole thing about really all behavior change is you have to front load. You have to tell people what's expected of them. We're going to do this. Here's what I expect you to do. You know, as soon as I see everyone with their book open to page so-and-so with their pencil out and their paper, we're ready to go. We can go, rather than shaming the children that don't have their things done. So yeah, it's the same thing. Hopefully that book will be published at the end of this year. So it's definitely, it's a book that'll help teachers. But in the meantime, you know, the book I have now, Yes, You Can Raise Happy, Responsible Children, is very useful for teachers. And it has a lot of the same information in it, you know, to help keep guide children into the right behaviors.
So did you study behavioral psychology? Which type of psychology did you study?
Yes. I was very, when I first started college, I was an assistant for a behaviorist, and I was always into behavior modification and how to change behavior. And I found it absolutely fascinating. And I learned a whole lot by studying that and how to, you know, reward, different reward systems, and when to use reward, when to use quote unquote punishment, and when to use ignoring. And, you know, I really have to emphasize, Karen, punishment, you've got to really be careful with punishment. You know, consequences are one thing. If a child forgets their coat, they're going to be cold. If they forget their lunch, they're not going to get to eat. You know, don't be always running or trying to save your child from their own bad choices. And that's really something, you know, I have this 3 L's of parenting. Love them enough to say no. No, you can't do that. No, we don't do that. No, you can't go there. Lead by example. And let them fail, which you've already talked about. Let them struggle. Let them figure it out themselves. Stop rushing in to help. Stop telling them, oh, honey, you know, don't try for that. You might not get that. Try for something that you can get. Well, every time we don't allow our children to go for stuff where they might fail, what we're teaching them is not to go for stuff that they really want. So then they become, they accept the job they don't really want, but they think, well, I can get this job. They accept the people in their lives that really don't challenge them or interest them. Well, yeah, but, you know, they like me, so they're my friends. You know, how about who do you like? Who do you want to be around? Whose behavior do you want to emulate?
Yeah. Yeah. I've read some stuff about, and kind of speaks to what you're talking about helicopter parenting, even though you feel, you know, of course, everybody knows what helicopter parenting is, like hovering over your child and taking care of every possible thing before it can go wrong. And they talked about how that actually undermines your child's confidence because just what you're talking about, they're not making decisions and trying something and seeing what the limit of their ability is. They're just like, everything's going to be taken care of, but then they don't believe in themselves.
Right. And they look to other people. Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of times in our lives, the other people we look to, they aren't the people we should be looking to for answers and information.
There's tons of people that are willing to tell you what you should spend your money on and what you should be doing, right? It's practically our whole culture nowadays.
Right, exactly.
Wow. So when is your book going to come out?
Hopefully, you know, well, the first one's already done. Yes, You Can Raise Happy, Responsible Children. And this you can get at Amazon. Right. So go over to Amazon or go to your library and ask for it. Go to your bookstore and ask for it. You should be able to get it anywhere. And well, the next one, it's still going to be a few months. It has to be edited and published yet. So, you know, maybe later in 2026, that one will be done. The one for teachers.
Later 2026. Cool. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't really address? You have such a sharp intellect. I really appreciate your perspective. Is there anything you think we missed?
Thanks, Karen. Well, there is something I really want to tell parents. You know what? One day at a time. Don't worry about it. Of course you made mistakes. You're human. So, you know, if you want to change, start now. Do things differently. Get new information. Stop blaming yourself and feeling bad about yourself. Move on and change things. So if you used to punish your children, well, find new ways to handle their misbehavior. You used to yell at them all the time. You know, I'll give you one more story. But I got to tell you a story about
my dog. I'm all about the stories. Go for it.
My dog is a rescue, and he's about 8 years old now. And he's big, so he can get up on the counters. Well, one day I was sitting at the table eating lunch, and he gets his paws up on the counter and he looks back at me, and I said, "Get off the counter." And I could see his brain. And he was thinking to himself, "I know you're eating and you're not going to get up. I'm not moving." I could yell all I wanted to. I needed to get up and say, "Get off that counter." But until I got up and went to the dog, he wasn't going to move. Same with our children. You can't just yell at them across the room. You have to get up, look them in the eye. We don't do that. Stop doing that. Here's what you can do. Here's what you can do. Always let them know what they can do. Rather than stop running in the house, walk in the house. So the same, you know, animals and people are like, well, we're all animals, right? Get up and do something. Don't just yell. Don't just, you know, punish all the time. And always tell your children you love them every single day. And talk about the things they do right.
Yeah. 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 Correction can be reinforcement, not just intimidation, right?
Right. Yeah. Here's how we do this. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That doesn't work. That doesn't work very well. Do you see how that look how else you could do this? Yeah.
Yeah. I used to have an 80-pound dog as well. And I always said to people, and again, also I felt bad saying it. I always used to say he prepared me really great for being a parent because he was always like kind of looking, being like, I know that's the limit. Do I think I could get just past that limit this time? And he was always testing me, you know.
Yep.
Good dog.
Yep, yep.
Smart dog. He wanted that turkey, right?
That's right. Exactly. So, and you know what? No matter how many times your child does the same misbehavior, don't have a fit. You know, this is the 20th time you've done that. I'm sick and tired. No, every time you need to get up, talk to the, you know, look the child right in the eye. No, we don't do that. We do this. And find other ways to work around it, because yelling, children become mother deaf, father deaf, adult deaf.
Yeah, that's for real. Yeah. Yeah. And it seems to me you're like the crux of what you're talking about is just presence and communication, right?
Yeah.
With
exactly.
Children.
Exactly. And appreciation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kids are amazing. Kids are amazing. And the more you talk to them and the more you listen to them, the more amazing things they say. Well, great. So thank you so much, Martha, for coming today. And you can find out Martha's contact info in the notes here. And we'll look forward to your book coming out.
Thanks. And go
to
my
next book.
Go to my website, marthaburridge.com, or you can go to Facebook. I'm on Facebook and YouTube, Martha Burridge Parenting. So. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Martha.
Thank you, Karen. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Same. Thanks for watching today. I'm glad you watched the whole thing. If you could do us a favor, it would help so much if you hit subscribe. It helps give us just a little boost to keep this podcast going. Thank you.